Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
I know today is Saturday with you for the next 3 hours. Again, I like to preface, just in case you hear a dog or maybe two or maybe three, maybe four, maybe five barking. Yep. I'm coming to you from my living room. Welcome to COVID-19 pandemic. Back in the studio, because he's just kicking butt and taking names. It's Ty and, of course, Kyrie as well at home answering the phone. So it's a three-man show, three different places. So bear with us, as always. Excited to be on today. Filled in for Chris Carlin last night. Had a pretty good show. And picking up where I left off, because obviously, you know, same topics to discuss at 10 p.m. and now at noon. And we are going to kick it off just to kind of give you an idea of what's coming your way in the next 3 hours. I do want to dive into what's going on with the Jets. So Jets fans, if you want to get on board, now's the time to do it. 800-919-3776 is the phone number. I do want to hear from you. We're going to get into what's going on with the Jets and Jamal Adams, what can happen there, where his camp is and what they want compared to what the Jets realistically should do. In my opinion, Bill Polian, who was on the Michael Kay show yesterday, might have a different opinion. Rich Cimini with some interesting insight in regard to where Jamal Adams' heart is. Also, last night I had Connor Rogers on with me, who covers the Jets for Bleacher Report. He had some interesting things to say as well that I'm going to share with you. So we will dive into the Jamal Adams. And, of course, big news yesterday that the Jets, they do sign Joe Flacco to a one-year deal. $1.5 million, that's his base salary. Incentives can increase that salary to $3 million. He's 35 years old. He had neck surgery in April. Keep in mind, Joe D, the new general manager of the Jets, was the area scout for the Baltimore Ravens when the Ravens drafted Joe Flacco back in 2008. I was actually in Baltimore at that time. My final 2 years in Baltimore covering the Baltimore Ravens, I had the pleasure, and I will say it was a pleasure, covering Joe Flacco. I love the kid. With all due respect, I love the man. I love the dude. I think he's great. I think this is a great signing. We're going to get into that as well. And Cynthia Freeland is going to be joining us this hour, which I'm really excited about. She'll be popping on with us around 12:30. We'll get her take. She's got her finger on the pulse of the Jets, probably better than most because of her relationship with Adam Gase. So we'll talk to Cynthia Freeland. She loves Jamal. I think Jamal, I would say, Ty, and you're typically producing the show on Saturdays when we have Cynthia Freeland on. I think it's safe to assume that I'd say Jamal Adams is probably top five favorite player for Cynthia Freeland in the NFL. Would you agree to that?
I would agree, and well deserved. Well deserved. He's a phenomenal player, so I can see why she is. He's on that top five list of Cynthia's.
He is. She absolutely loves him. So I am actually quite excited to have Cynthia on the show. I also want to dive into what's going on with the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott, because when you talk about potential trade opportunities for Jamal Adams and the Jets, the Dallas Cowboys do pop up. And the fact that they've got a quarterback situation brewing, I think we need to dive into as well. So we'll do that. And last time I was on Saturday, we spent a lot of time talking about the proposed incentives for the NFL owners to change the Rooney Rule in a way. Well, maybe not change the Rooney Rule, but give the owners some type of more motivational opportunities to open up their hiring process and to consider more minorities, whether it's head coaches or offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, whatever the case may be. That was shelved. That was in 86. They said no, but there have been, it looks like there are going to be some changes. And so I do want to dive into that during this show as well. I have an interesting guest who's going to be joining us around 2 o'clock this afternoon. Her name is Amy Dash. She's a legal analyst for Fox and CBS. So this morning, I go on my Twitter site, and every now and then I'll see, like, all right, you know, who new is following me on Twitter? And so Amy was a new follow, so I checked her out, and I followed back, and I was looking at her Twitter feed, and she's got some interesting information, Ty, in regard to what's going on with DeAndre Baker down in Miami and what's happening specifically with the attorneys that are handling not only the DeAndre Baker case, but also the Quentin Dunbar case, and what information is being shared publicly on social media that is evidence that can really hurt DeAndre Baker. Not only DeAndre Baker, but a number of these NFL players, if and when, I would imagine that the NFL is going to investigate all that took place down there in Miramar, Florida. And there's this is beyond like robbery and, you know, the four counts of what DeAndre Baker is being charged with. This could be a bigger story right now in regard to a high stakes gambling gathering that took place down there with not just Baker and Dunbar's, but a number of NFL players. And so, you know, she's on top of that story. So I thought it'd be great to get her on the show today. And she's agreed to come on with us around 2 o'clock. So that's appointment radio, because this story, I think, is going to end up in everything that I read this morning. I have a feeling this story is going to be bigger than just DeAndre Baker. This could be an NFL story, and there could be quite a few Miami Dolphin players that are implemented in this. Have you followed the story in this regard? Have you heard about this path now that this story is taken?
No, I haven't. So I'm excited to listen to that spot at 2 o'clock.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm excited to have Amy Dash on. That's 2 o'clock. And sports as we know it, okay, has not been, live and local, but we got a little taste of it last Sunday with the two-man skins game. Ricky Fowler and Matthew Wolf went up against Rory and DJ. Unfortunately, because I'm a big Ricky Fowler fan, I had a lot of money rolling on Ricky Fowler and Matthew Wolf. The last six holes went into the skins pushed into the last six holes, and then it went into a playoff, and the playoff was closest to the pin on hole 17, which is a par 3, and Rory won it, which really stunk for me, but it was so fun to watch. And now this coming Sunday, tomorrow, we've got the match 2. And what are we talking about? We're talking about Tiger Woods, who's teaming up with Peyton Manning, and they're going up against Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady. So Mike Collins, a.k.a. the Caddy, will be popping on with us today at 1:30. Again, another appointment radio. Mike is so awesome. So we'll talk to him about the match. I also want to talk to Mike about the fact that the PGA Tour is getting ready to kick off again in mid-June. They've got their next tournament picking up where they left off. Keep in mind their season had begun already, and then they had to take kind of like the NBA, right? And then they had to shut it down because of the pandemic, and now they're looking to pick it up again in Fort Worth, Texas, coming up mid-June. And so I want to get an update from Michael in regard to how far along they are, how the government is cooperating with the PGA Tour, what that tournament is going to look like for a lot of these PGA Tour players, you know, how life as we know it, not just our own lives, and how, you know, we go about our day-to-day activity now, but also how professional athletes in the leagues are going to do it. So I want to talk to Mike about that as well, and he'll give us a preview in regard to Sunday. And then I'm really excited about this. Earlier this week, so I've been doing a lot of podcasts via Zoom since the pandemic, kind of took over our lives. And, so once every 2 weeks, I'll post a golf podcast. On the Tee with Anita Marks was a show that we were hoping to re-air. This would have been our third season here on 98.7 ESPN. But again, because of the pandemic, we haven't been able to do it, but I've been posting, our podcast, and there's a podcast up right now with me, John Mascari, who is the head pro over at Alpine, and Christina Thompson, who owns Golf for Her. So the three of us host the podcast, and we had Mike Adams, who's the head instructor at Medalist, join us on the podcast. He is known as the swing doctor, and he has coached Tiger Woods before. Now keep in mind, Medalist is Tiger Woods' home course. So out of all four guys that are going to be teeing it up tomorrow in this tournament, Tiger knows this course like no one else. So we were thrilled to have Mike Adams on our podcast, and I'm going to play that interview for you at 2:30 this afternoon. He really dives into this tournament. I'll call it a tournament. The match 2, and really gives us a deep dive into the golf course at Medalist, who he expects to win and why. And he really, he goes at one, it's a pretty lengthy, I'm going to warn you, it's a pretty lengthy interview. He really does a deep dive into every hole at Medalist.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
So here's what the deal is. Jamal Adams, listen, two Pro Bowls in 3 years. Okay. He's going into his fourth year. Now he's expected to make $3.5 million this year, a year during the pandemic, by the way. In year, his fifth year in 2021, he's expected to make $9.9 million. In 2022, by the way, that is a year that the Jets, if they so choose, could tag him. Not only could they tag him in 2022, they could tag him in 2023 as well. Here's the thing. Not the latest collective bargaining agreement, but the collective bargaining agreement that was negotiated before this new one. If you recall, rookies were making like ridiculous amounts of money before they even stepped foot onto a football field. More than, let's say, a veteran who'd been playing and had established himself and his worth for 3 or 4 years. So that's why it changed. That's why there was rookie deals that were put in place where a rookie gets a certain salary through the first 4 years. And then there's a fifth year option. And then a team is able to tag that player, another 2 years, right? Like, this, and that deal that was put in place is so that teams can benefit from drafting well. Let's be honest. And Ty, you mentioned it. I said it before. Jamal Adams has to be one of Cynthia Freeland's favorite NFL players. Why? Because he's just that damn good. Two Pro Bowls in his first 3 years in the NFL. Nobody's denying that Jamal Adams is a phenomenal talent and not only could be the face of a defense, but maybe the face of a franchise. Granted, yeah, you've got Sam Darnold. And he more than likely is and will continue to be the face of the Jets. But nonetheless, this is an outstanding player. And so, it's kind of like there's two sides here, right? Like if you're the Jets, you want to be able to take advantage, and it is kind of taking advantage of a player of this magnitude, what he brings to the table athletically, personally, professionally, leadership-wise, in your locker room, heart of a lion, loves to win, can't stand losing, he's got all the intangibles. So you don't want to tick him off. You don't want to create a bad relationship. You want to make sure that the player is happy. You want to make sure that the player likes playing here. You want to make sure the player wants to be a Jet. But at the same time, that part of the collective bargaining agreement that was negotiated a few years ago is so that NFL teams can have an advantage of having exceptional players that they drafted play for them for next to nothing until their rookie deal is up. Here's an interesting stat for you. Since 2011, only 16 of 223 first round players that were picked in the first round have received new contracts after the third season. 16 of 223. Now that last one happens to be Christian McCaffrey, which I'm sure doesn't sit well with Jamal Adams considering that he was drafted two spots after Jamal Adams. They were both in the same draft class. So it's kind of, you know, Joe D and the Jets are unfortunately in, I would say, not a great situation right now because they get paid to know. They're more in the know than we are, but if we know that Jamal Adams is the kind of player that you don't want to lose on your team and you want to make sure that you continue to have a good rapport with, you want to make the player happy. And on top of that, he is deserving. Let's all be honest here. He is deserving of a new contract. But at the same time, as an organization, you're trying to win a championship. And how do you win a championship? I'm going to share this, really quick because I do want to play, by the way, Ty, I want to play a Bill Polian cut. So have that, just have the Bill Polian sound up in a second. I'm going to ask you to play a clip in a minute, but just to kind of give you an idea. And typically I'm referring to quarterbacks. Okay. Because as we know, Dak Prescott wants to be paid as the highest quarterback in the NFL right now. The deal that's on the table for him from the Dallas Cowboys is somewhere in the realm of the second best quarterback, kind of like the Carson Wentz and Jared Goff deal. Okay. He doesn't, the deal that would surpass Russell Wilson is $35 million a year is not on the table for Dak, right? And that's where the disconnect is. But here's the thing. You go out as a team and you pay a player a lot of money. More, and what I'm talking about is, and again, I know I'm comparing apples and oranges here with Jamal Adams and a quarterback. The highest paid safety in the NFL is Eddie Jackson from the Chicago Bears. He makes $14.6 million a year. Again, Jamal Adams right now is making 3.5. Is he worth more than that? Is he due? Does he deserve it? Absolutely. But in order to win in the NFL, the formula is to have exceptional talent that you were able to go out there and draft, perform above what you're paying them because they're still on their rookie deal, and then allows your cap space to spend money on free agents that are just going to take your team to that other level. Give you depth, because you need depth to win a Super Bowl in the NFL. So the formula to win doesn't suffice the Jets paying Jamal Adams right now. Now, pay him in his fourth year. Or I should say, pay him after his fourth year. I can see that. But to pay him right now, it's like you're cutting off your nose to spite your face. Do me a favor, Ty, if you can, because Bill Polian is all about paying Jamal Adams right now. Play the clip where he says the question is posed. And again, he was on the Michael Kay Show yesterday. Should the Jets pay Jamal Adams now or wait? Let's listen in. Bill Polian.
Well, you're trying to hit the sweet spot in between. The agent is probably threatening all kinds of dire consequences if they don't do something now. It's exacerbated by the terrible tragedy that we're facing in our country. The benefit here for the club to sign him now is that you'll have less dead money at the end of it, because the likelihood is, let's say it's a 5-year deal, the likelihood is that he plays all five at a high level. So that's the benefit of doing it now. They don't have to do anything at all. With a player this good, you probably bend over backwards to try and get it done.
So you can hear Bill Polian feeling that the Jets should pay him. Again, I was going to share this stat for you. And again, I know I'm comparing apples and oranges here because this is quarterbacks and not necessarily safeties. But the concept is the same, right? In order to win in the NFL, you are looking to get exceptional performance from the rookies that you draft. So you're underpaying them based on the performance and what they're providing for you so that you could spend that money elsewhere. Okay? Teams that have anteed up to pay their quarterbacks the 28, 30, 32, 35 million dollars. Here's a list of quarterbacks who've taken up more than 14% of their team's salary cap over the past 5 years. And guess what? Not one of them have won a Super Bowl. One of them took their team to the Super Bowl and they lost. But I don't think that was his fault. I think that was Kyle Shanahan's fault, because they didn't run the football and they gave the football and they gave the time back to Tom Brady and the Patriots and they won the Super Bowl. But Andrew Luck, Matt Ryan, Matthew Stafford, Big Ben, Aaron Rodgers, Eli Manning, Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins, Drew Brees. These are quarterbacks that teams anteed up and paid them the big money. And it's just, it's a formula that doesn't allow a team to get where it needs to go in order to win a Super Bowl. It just doesn't. 800-919-3776. Let's go to Anthony in Bayonne. Anthony, welcome in.
What's up?
Hi. Good afternoon, Anthony.
How's it going? I think the big problem is if everything's true that he wants to get to be the highest paid bet, that's the problem. If you want to be the highest paid safety, I don't think the Jets would even balk at that, because I think the highest paid safety is making what? 11 and a half, maybe 12.
14.6. Eddie Jackson, 14.6 a year.
Okay, so 14.6. And I think he's asking for more than what C.J. Mosley gets. I think 17, from what everybody's saying. You know, nobody really knows unless you're the two people in the table. But if you're trying to be the highest paid Jet, that's never going to happen in any team as a safety. Even Ed Reed wasn't the highest paid player on the Ravens. It's just the position. If he played linebacker, he'd probably have a better shot at it. Like, if he said, you know what?
I don't even think a linebacker is the highest paid on the defense.
Well, CJ Mosley, I think, has $17 million this year. Like, I think that's the contract that they're trying to beat, is CJ Mosley's deal. Granted, it was a free agent deal, but still, it's like, at least if you're playing linebacker, it's a more premium position because you are doing more. Now, he plays up in the box, he plays deep, but at the same time, he's a safety.
He's a safety, but he also he brings, and Anthony, thank you for your phone call. He brings incredible leadership to the Jets defense and this organization. Not just on the defensive side of the ball, just team wise. There are intangibles that Jamal Adams brings to the table that, in my opinion, are priceless. And I'll just end on this before we take a break, and Cynthia Freeland is going to be joining us momentarily, and that is, when you talk to general managers, where you need to spend your money, defensive end, shut down corner, because you're eliminating an area of the field that most quarterbacks are too frightened to throw to. So now you're shortening the field for all your other defensive players. So defensive end, shut down corner, left tackle on the offensive line, and your quarterback. That's where you spend the majority of your money. Those are your highest paid players on a football team. You don't pay a wide receiver. You don't pay a running back. It's those four players.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
I do want to dive into some of the news that broke this week in regards to trying to improve the coaching pipeline in the NFL and the changes to the Rooney Rule. Before we dive into those changes, I think it's important that you understand that out of the 32 teams in the NFL, there are 30 Caucasian coordinators. Okay? Offensive coordinators. 28, there are only four minority head coaches. Since 2015, 83 coordinator positions have been available, and only 6 of those coordinating positions have been offered to minorities. Also, the quarterback coach situation, which is kind of the offensive coordinator kind of feeder job. Majority of offensive coordinators come from quarterback coaches, elevate from quarterback coaches. 30 of the 32 QB coaches in the NFL are Caucasian. So just marinate in that for a minute, considering that over 70% of the NFL players are African American. So, you know, obviously not a very good representation. So something needs to give, something needs to change. And again, I mentioned this last week, and I apologize for not remembering exactly who said this, whose quote this was. But, you know, when asked, like, why is that? Like, why aren't the owners more open or more receptive or, you know, giving African Americans, let alone not just African, but minorities? You know, Ron Rivera got the new head coaching position in Washington, D.C. And, you know, so, and the quote was, the owners are willing to invite the minorities to dinner. They just don't want them sitting at their table. And I thought that was a very interesting quote. After the everything was finalized in regard to the hiring process that took place this year, which was very, very disappointing. So now, how is it trying to change in regard to the Rooney Rules? Well, number one, now a team must not just interview one, but two minorities for a head coaching position. Also, must be a multiracial job search for the offensive and defensive coordinator position. And teams cannot block interviews, which I think is huge as well. So teams can no longer block interviews. Now here's the question. Like, is this going to change in regard to the percentage of minorities that are general managers, that are head coaches, that are coordinators, that are quarterback coaches? I have to be honest, I don't think so. I think this is a mindset when it comes to the owners. I think a lot of these decisions are because in regard to the positions of power, and the positions of power being head coach, offensive coordinator, quarterback coach, those are the jobs that are most coveted is because of the ownership. So even though an owner now must bring in two minorities as opposed to one for the interview process, is that going to make him hire one of those two minorities that he interviews? Probably not. I'm just being honest. I think it's sad. I don't agree with it. I think the representation is so far off. I think it's a black eye, no pun intended, for the NFL. I think it's embarrassing for the ownership group in the NFL. So how do you motivate? You know, and if you recall, Ty, last week, you know, we really dove into some of the potential suggestions that were on the table in regard to certain draft picks, getting an extra third round draft pick, getting a compensatory fourth round pick or fifth round pick, depending on an owner deciding to give a minority an opportunity and offering the job. And that did not, that obviously was not accepted in the owners' meetings. This was. But I want to throw out some other things I was talking about that I thought of, that I'd love to get your response on, Ty. How about having not an advantage, but how about a team having a say in regard to their schedule? If an owner goes out and hires an offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, or head coach, depending on, you know, you're able to have some type of say in regard to how your schedule plays out. So, for example, maybe you have less West Coast or East Coast games, depending on what side of the country you're on. Maybe, like last year, the Atlanta Falcons, I want to say it was the Atlanta Falcons, had a schedule where they were home 1 week, away 1 week. Home 1 week, away 1 week. They never had two road games back to back. They never had two home games back to back. But a lot of teams would love that type of schedule. What about the bye week? Bye week is so important. Teams that have a bye week in like week four, or teams that have a bye week in like week 14, sucks. Where do you want your bye week? You want your bye week right in the middle of the season. You want your bye week at like week 7, 8, 9. So do you have an advantage in regard to where you get to choose where you want your bye week? How about, you know, you don't have to participate in, you're eliminated from the list of teams that are potential for Hard Knocks. Or maybe, that year you don't have to travel. You don't have to go out of the country. You don't have to play in Mexico. You don't have to play in London. You know, I think that there are other ways that aren't as drastic as offering what it would be for a team to improve its ability in the draft, which I think, again, drastic. I was all for the proposal, and I said it last week. A lot of times, you know, in order for something to change, sometimes you need to do drastic things in order for change to happen. And I think what was proposed last week in regard to what teams, advantage, what they would get in the draft was pretty extreme. I don't think this is as extreme. And I would imagine this still has some type of motivational factor. Where your bye week is placed, you not having to travel out of the country, not having to go, you know, this coming, you know how much I love the Ravens this year to win the Super Bowl. Do you know what the Ravens this year, you know what their travel mileage is this year, Ty?
Oh, they've got a cakewalk.
6,000 miles. That's it. The amount of total miles, mileage in the air that the Baltimore Ravens have to travel this year is 6,000. You know who has to travel the most? Seattle Seahawks. 29,000 miles. The Seattle Seahawks have to travel this year. The Baltimore Ravens, six. Six. That's it. It's the fewest amount of travel mileage that an NFL team has had the luxury of in I want to say the past 3 to 5 years, something like that. So I think that there is some motivational things that the NFL can do pertaining to the schedule that I think would be fair and not as drastic as what was proposed last week. Agree or disagree, Ty?
It's not as drastic, but I still don't like the idea of having to incentivize NFL organizations to just be fair and hire people who are qualified for the job, because that's what it comes down to. It's less about, well, we're doing the best for our organization and we just feel like these guys are better than the minority head coaches. And it's more about just, look, have an even playing field. We know that there are minority head coaches and assistant coaches who are qualified for this job and you're just not hiring them. So I think the better suggestion would be to just do the right thing. How about that? So we don't have to incentivize NFL organizations.
Yeah, but they're not. They're not doing the right thing and they haven't done the right thing.
No, and
years.
I get that. But I back to my point, I don't like the idea. And it's not that you're not creative enough. It's just, you shouldn't have to bribe organizations to hire black coaches. That's just the bottom line. And I think anything that's rooted in having to do that, I'm just going to vehemently disagree with.
It's fair.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
We're going to get to your calls in just a second. But Ty, you said you had one more thing you wanted to chime in?
Well, just to make my point clearer, you know, another problem with the bribing of organizations as far as hiring minority coaches brings forth.
They don't
forth.
Want to call it bribing. I understand
well,
why you're
it
calling
you,
it bribing.
You say it's incentivizing, but it's just dressing up what it actually is, and it's bribing. Uh-huh. It now makes the candidate feel so uncomfortable in a sense of, did you actually hire me because you wanted to gain a competitive advantage over your opponents, or was it because you legitimately felt that I was qualified enough and better than everyone else? And I think that is an uncomfortable situation to be in. Now, you'll say, well, you should be happy and thankful to be an NFL head coach. There's only 32 of them out there. I'm one of the 32. And that makes sense, but it's still an uncomfortable circumstance to be part of, especially when you don't know if there is like the sincerity associated with it that it's supposed to be, if that makes sense to you.
It does. I understand. So if you're Eric Bieniemy and you get a head coaching job next year, do you sit back and go, well, I was more qualified and should have gotten an opportunity last year and I didn't. So this year, am I getting it because this team is getting X, Y, and Z because they hired me? It's kind of like that question, you know, most professional athletes ask, like, is this girl dating me because she really likes me, or is she dating me because I'm a professional athlete?
And I think that is a terrific analogy there.
Right? Like some of the best stories that I've heard, like in talking to professional athletes who, when they share their story in regard to like how they met their wife, the majority of them love dating women, going on dates with women who have no idea who they are. Like, don't follow sports, don't care about football, don't care about baseball, don't care about basketball, had never heard of him before, really can care less what he does. And those typically are the women that most professional athletes like to date and eventually marry, because it's kind of like they know this woman is with me because of who I am, not because of what I do for a living or the amount of money that I make. You know, so I guess I can see that as an analogy. Like this owner is hiring me because of who I am and what I bring to the equation. And also, here's another thing. I'll go one step further. You know, does the head coach lose respect in the locker room with the players because he was hired because of the incentive? I'm sure that has to be a concern for a minority hire. If there was, as you like to call it, bribery in place. I'll call it incentives. You call it bribery. 800-919-3776. Doug in Long Island, welcome in.
Hey, how are you? First time caller, and had the opportunity to talk to Kay Will a little bit. And I get where you're coming from. But generally with these guys, and I've known many of them, I owned a place down the street from Hofstra, and a lot of the Jets used to come in there. And I mean, most of the guys met their wives in school, et cetera. But I don't know about the Rooney Rule and the depth of it. You'd have to look into someone's heart and soul. I mean, I have had a unique experience. My dad was the first African-American teacher on Long Island. He's the only coach to win basketball championships with both the girls and the boys. My brother happened to be the first part of the first African-American tandem to run a professional sports organization in the history of it. Didn't work out for him. But I can say, you know, one thing, that he's grateful for the opportunity. And, you know, I'm glad he had that shot. I, thought he was treated a little bit unfairly by the press, because I know kind of what went on with the depth of it after him taking over from Phil Jackson. I thought that you guys kind of required that he win in a struggling organization. But I will tell you that has to be the end goal. But I can tell you this, stepping away from the Knicks situation, he's grateful and happy for the opportunity. And I can say one thing to you, and then I'll wait for comments. I will say, you tell me the last time the Knicks had five first-round picks and clear cap space, and I'll wait. You won't do. You can't do everything in one shot. You can't do both. Get a clean shot as an organization. You cannot create a winner in 2.5 years and get 5 first-round picks and clear your cap space. And but I just, you know, that the whole thing is, I have a little unique perspective. I mean, I'm a Catholic school guy. I played at St. Agnes with Billy Donovan. Know Tim Clouse from there as well. Know a lot about this situation. And you know, I just think it's good to get an opportunity, but then when you get there, you're going to have to perform, and you're going to be treated unfairly, African-American or not. You're not going to get the time you need to really structure and change things.
Expectations, Doug, thank you for the phone call. I mean, expectations, you know, I can relate to that being a woman, especially in the field that I'm in. You know, there's a different set of expectations that I have to meet that most men that are in this industry don't. And when we're given an opportunity, yeah, we have to overperform to keep our jobs. That's for sure. Let's go to Travis in the Bronx. Travis, you're up.
What's up, Anita? Yeah, I kind of want to touch on what you were proposing. You know, I spoke to Ty offline and I said I really feel it's disrespectful to incentivize, because it's almost as if it's not my place, and I'm a white guy, and I feel like it's not our place to incentivize absurdities like that, because you want to be hired based on, you know, on merit, and you want to feel like you,
Travis, absolutely. But here's what the problem is, but it's not happening. So, and the conversation has been there each and every year. We talk about it each and every year. And still nothing is changing. And so how do you propose that it changes?
I have two ideas. One is to assemble a panel of, you know, thought leaders who are not so close to the sport to develop, you know, opportunities or ways of advancement that the sport really hasn't really thought of. You know, like I feel like you're so close to it. You're so used to doing things a certain way. Almost assemble a group of thought leaders in other areas of businesses and industry that has seen an uptick in diversity. And another idea is to create a panel across all, you know, major league sports and really develop, you know, clear guidelines for, you know, any new hires and any new potential new hires. So this way you can't say that the NBA is hiring 75% more than the NFL, because they're all talking to each other and they're all developing ways to kind of vet the process. Because I really find it hard to believe that in today's day and age, you know, we can see so much change, but and especially at the quarterback position. If you look at the quarterback position over the last 7 to 10 years, it's changed drastically, and there's no reason, as these players start to evolve into, like, you know, coaches, there's no way that some of these players can't turn into head coaches. And I just feel like we need to start changing the way we think, and that starts at the top.
Travis, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Mike in Linden. Mike, welcome in.
Hey, what's going on, Anita? I got a proposal that'll probably help or should help. I think they should just expand on the Rooney Rule. And if you interview three white candidates, you should just interview three minority candidates instead of just one. It just ups the number.
That's the new. So now, just Mike, the new proposal is they must now interview two minorities, and also,
yeah, but it just should be equal. It should be equal, so it's 50-50 chance that a minority gets it. I mean, Mike Tomlin wasn't the number one choice for Pittsburgh when he got the job, and the Rooney Rule worked, and he must have interviewed well, and he's a great head coach. I mean, I just think giving opportunity, the incentive thing, to me, it's not just the meaning. I think you're going to have people like Bill Belichick just hire some guy who's not even qualified, pay him a tenth of what they should be getting paid just so they move up in the draft. It's they're going to start messing with the rules, and I just don't see that as being any bit productive. A lot of people are qualified. I don't understand. Just give them an opportunity, and I think they'll get the jobs.
Mike, thank you for the phone call. I'll end the conversation on this because we have Michael Collins, a.k.a. the Caddy, who's going to be jumping on next to preview tomorrow's match between Tom Brady teaming up with Phil Mickelson, of course, Tiger Woods teaming up with Peyton Manning. We had Harry Carson, who I just absolutely adore, on the show last week when the story broke in regard to some of the stuff that was being proposed to the owners before their meeting on Tuesday. And, you know, it's a tough situation for Harry because Harry is one of the veteran players that is a huge voice in the advancement of minority hiring in the NFL. And he also, he said, I wear many hats and I'm at the Giants facility a lot. And now the Giants went out and they have hired Joe Judge to be the new head coach of the Giants. Joe Judge, as we know, happens to be Caucasian and also happens to come from not only the Bill Belichick tree, but as well as Nick Saban tree, highly recommended, but comes in as a special teams coach. Like, granted, yes, he had a different title his final year with the Patriots, but nonetheless, to sit there and to say that there weren't more qualified minority coaches in the NFL for that hire, there were. But with the recommendation of both Saban and Belichick and trying to bring in and implement the organizational structure from New England into a Giants organization that has been failing miserably the last few years from Ben McAdoo and Pat Shurmur was more important for Mara and Tisch than to go out and to give a more qualified coach who happens to be a minority the opportunity to come in here and change things around. And one might call that just being a part of the good old boys club. And again, we had Harry on, and Harry said, listen, I wear many hats and I'm part of the Giants organization. I go in there and I'm Joe Judge seems like a really, really nice guy. And I have to support the hire, and I want to see nothing but good things happen to him. I'm part of the Giants organization and it's my legacy and whatnot, but you know, you could hear it in Harry's voice, you know, definitely disappointed that the Giants did not really kind of expand. They knew they wanted Joe Judge. They could have brought in five minorities for interviews at the end of the day, because Nick Saban and Bill Belichick and a slew of others that organization listens to was highly recommending Joe Judge. They knew that's who they were going for. And this is what we see happen time and time and time again in the NFL. And for it to change, I feel if we're going to see change, there has to be incentives in order for it to change. Or I don't think we're going to see a change. I really don't.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.